grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 282 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming to you live tonight from Austin, Texas. Our guest this evening is Dr. Tersha Hamilton. She is the author of Holistic Medicine, or I'm sorry, of she is a holistic medicine practitioner, as well as the author of Take Vacations Daily, and the all-new Quarantine Kitchen Cookbook, which is available on Amazon, as well as her site. We're going to be talking about holistic medicine, what holistic medicine actually means, trying to get away from all of the hoodoo of it, and the really, I think, bad rap that holistic medicine and naturopathic medicine has gotten over the years. It's gotten really, really bad reviews from a lot of people when it's one of those, it's been practiced by actively cultures for thousands of years. Some of these medicinal practices go back to ancient China, things like that. So to kind of dismiss it, it's interesting to see now. I even saw a study the other day where, in the UK, they have gone through, I want to say it was there was an alchemist who had done a bunch of medicinal tinctures, things like that. I think it was Bald's Reference or something like that. And like medieval, you know, put this together, put that together, and lo and behold, yeah, it was actually an antibacterial, just like it said it was used for. And this is something that goes back to the 1500s. So they are actively starting to look at a lot of these older uses of medicine, traditional uses of medicine, things like that, as viable treatment. And we want to talk about that in reference to our modern society and everything else with our guest this evening, Dr. Tersha Hamilton. How are you doing this evening, doctor?
I am doing absolutely fantastic today. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Most definitely. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. As I told you before the show, we've had a couple of people on in the past to talk about similar style topics, not necessarily naturopathic medicine, because I, much like most of my topics, prefer finding an actual professional in the field whenever it comes to such things, not just somebody who practices on Facebook. I know plenty of people that do that kind of stuff, but to know somebody that is an actual practicing naturopathic doctor to come on and talk about these things is a little bit different. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. And I'm always excited to, share like the medicine, share more, you know, exposure to naturopathic medicine, and just share information because, you know, it's vital, especially now, as you mentioned and as you alluded to, we've been on Earth for so many thousands of years, and just because there wasn't double-blind, placebo-controlled case studies, you know, past a couple hundred years ago, doesn't mean that what people did was invalid. So, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share some of that information.
Well, and, you know, it's so important for us to look at things with a broader scope. We talk about regularly on the show the religion of science and the fact that most doctors are not willing to look outside of their scope because, well, they're a doctor, and how are they supposed to recommend something that they know nothing about? I now have CBD as a recommend on my medical list from my doctor for my anxiety. That would not have happened 20 years ago. It just wouldn't have. Not that CBD was not being created. Not that there weren't, you know, good people like Rick Simpson out there making his oils and tinctures for people who were suffering from chemotherapy treatment, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
These things existed. It's just that doctors poo-pooed them as not being proper medicine. When it's like, wow, you know, no, using that actually does help.
You know, it's funny because some of these things are vilified, but they're still used in conventional medicine. For example, cocaine, opioids, like those types of drugs that are highly regulated and quote-unquote illegal, are actually still used very much so in medicine. Now, of course, they're used in very specific ways. But the fact remains that these things that have been vilified, that are vilified, still have very specific medicinal uses. So, it's interesting how that happens. There are, you know, most of the medications that we use are extracts from herbs. So, you know, they go in, they find the specific constituent that they feel is giving it the action that they want to, and then they take it and they extract it out, and then concentrate it. So, yeah, it's sort of like, I don't even know the word. It's like, you know, you're vilifying it, but you're still using it.
Yeah, precisely. It is most definitely a double standard whenever you're going to say, like, oh, this, and, you know, the only real word to use for it is entheogen. You know, ethnic plants and medicines that are used by, quote, witch doctors, things like that. We have definitely covered on this show the fact that mushrooms are now being used in psychological studies for depression as far as microdosing on a regular basis. And those are showing great results over, like, major medications as far as microdosing on a daily basis, being able to get yourself out of a depressive loop, even going as far as ayahuasca treatment, that is being explored right now by the FDA. I know that it has actually been decriminalized in California.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one, but it doesn't shock me.
Yeah,
it's like once there is more research on it, then it's like, oh, hey, we discovered this thing. That's great. Well, it's been around, so it's not a discovery. You just allowed yourself to be open to it, but it's not a discovery.
Yeah.
So, that's definitely a thing.
Yeah, that's like saying you discovered America. No, you found the people that were hanging out here.
Precisely. That is it. You discovered
America
the
wasn't
land
discovered.
That somebody else was living on that you knew nothing about.
Not our fault that you knew nothing about it. All right?
Exactly.
Precisely the exact same situation here where, you know, just the concept of being able to tell people that, you know, druids used willow bark and tincture of willow bark to help migraines and headaches and women in menstruation. That is the basis of the compounds cetylsalicylic acid, aspirin.
Mm-hmm. Aspirin.
Yeah. Boiled willow bark distilled down into a powder and made into a hydrochloric, folks. That's pretty much it. I hate to break the secret, a BC powder and things like that. But once again, like you were saying, to go back and know that cocaine was regularly used as an anesthetic, it's still used. Doctors can still technically prescribe it as pain relief, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's so many herbs or herbal extracts that are used. But there's sort of a disconnect between that and quote unquote medicine that, you know, people vilify the herbs, but still turn around and use them. And and so I'm glad that you're able to, you know, share this with your audience. So hopefully somebody will be able to, you know, look at it differently and at minimum just start to question things, as opposed to taking things for face value, you know, oh, that's bad because they said it's bad. Oh, that's bad. You know, because we don't want that. We don't want that, especially when there are things out here that are very useful.
Yeah, precisely. There is so much out there right now that we are just now starting to get a grasp of. And to know that science, to know that doctors are now starting to be open to those possibilities is really fantastic and really groundbreaking in so many ways. Now, for you, just a quick question, which as I started to ask it a while ago, I looked at the clock and went, oh my God, no, we are like 3 minutes out from show. I can't get into that question right now. So I'm going to ask it right now. For you as a doctor, which came first here, the chicken or the egg? Was it the naturopathic side of Dr. Tershaw, or was it the doctor side, the practitioner
side? Personally, I actually knew nothing about holistic medicine growing up. I've been wanting to be a doctor since I was about three. My parents told me I was about 3 years old. So that desire to use medicine to help people feel better was always there. It wasn't until after I graduated college, biology pre-med, that I found out about holistic medicine. But when I did, I was like, you know what? This makes absolute sense. Like we said earlier, mm-hmm. people have been here forever. Herbs have been here forever. Food is here forever. And all of these natural means, acupuncture and water and all of these things have been here. And, you know, nature, we have been using them and we've survived. You know, we haven't always had the best track record, but we don't have the best track record now either. So, you know, there's that. So that's sort of how it went. And then once I found out about naturopathic medicine, there was no looking back. It was what I felt like I was meant to do. Mm-hmm. And I was really excited to get into it because I was able to marry so many of the things that I had done in my past. You know, the science. I was a personal trainer for a while. I was a teacher for a while. I had just learned about fasting and nutrition and herbs, and to be able to take all of that and use it in a medical practice to me was outstanding. It was just amazing to be able to marry all of that and still be able to use conventional medicine. So that's sort of my story.
And I love hearing people's stories of how they got into these just different means of taking care of people. Dr. Mm-hmm. John Hall's story about how he started into his work is absolutely amazing. And to hear your story as well really kind of drives home the point of you never really know where things are going to lead you. And you know, right now, our world, like you were saying before the show, we were talking about the fact that humanity itself doesn't have a great track record dealing with these things. It doesn't really have a great track record with having an open mind. It wasn't but like 1,500 or so folks that we all decided together as a society of humanity that the world was round, indeed. Like less than 700 years ago. Just let that sink into your head. and you'll realize where we are as humanity, where we are as people. And like you were just saying, to say that medical means and medical practices herbal medicines being used by societies for hundreds, if not thousands of years in some cases, to be doubted or not touted by medical or even explored by modern medical means is a bit haphazard on our part.
Yeah, part of it I can sort of understand, sort of. Part of the idea is that because there's so much variance in nature, that it makes it, or it can make it, more difficult to give a medicine and know without a shadow of a doubt whether or not that medicine is helping the person. And with that mindset comes our modern medicine, where you take something, you extract out the parts, and then you standardize it so that if there is variation in response, then you know that that variation comes not because there's a different level of X, Y, and Z. Because, you know, depending on, say you're using cinnamon. If you get cinnamon from, and I don't remember where cinnamon grows, but if you get cinnamon grown in my backyard versus, you know, in California versus in India versus in, you know, the volcanoes of Hawaii, they're going to have different properties, different medicinal properties. And so, you know, with that, it makes it a little bit more difficult to standardize it, or to follow it specifically. So in that mindset, I understand, but then you still take away from the beauty of the medicine itself, because it has variation, because there are other nutrients that work in concert with those specific compounds that you're trying to work with. That is the beauty of using nature as medicine. It's understandable, but it still takes away a lot of the beauty of nature and medicine.
Sure, absolutely. And just to give you an example, folks, for those of you out there that are like, well, yeah, I mean, of course it's going to be that way. You know, there's different plants growing around the cinnamon tree near your house than there are near me. So cross-pollination is going to create variations. The environment, the water, all that stuff is going to create variation. So doesn't that make it, in and of itself, pseudoscience? And the answer to that question is no, it does not. And I'll tell you why. I myself take medication for my anxiety. I have sat in on conferences. Just so you know, doctor, my job is to typically, before all this plague happened, I would be sitting in the back of a room on a typical afternoon running presentations for doctors like you at conferences. So I have sat in on more than one conference where they are actively talking about the new medications for depression, all that kind of stuff. And as much as they can tell you, about side effects, B, what they can do for you, there is not a doctor out there that can actively tell you why an SRI, a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, why it will affect you one way and me a different way. They cannot explain that. Yet still it is prescribed on the regular. It's literally anomalous. They're like, they could give you the exact same dosage that they give me. We could have the exact same body weight, exact same body type, same blood type, same symptomology, and have totally different results from the exact same medication. So there's literally no difference between what you are doing and what the average doctor is doing whenever they're going, let's give you some sertraline for a couple of months and see how that works out for you.
Right. And the example that you gave, that's part of the conundrum of conventional medicine.
Precisely.
But for us, for naturopathic doctors, for holistic practitioners, that's a part of the beauty of it. Because no two people are exactly alike. I could have 10 people come into my office with headaches. Now, the easy thing to do is to start off with aspirin and then give a higher dose and then give a higher dose and then give a different medication. But that doesn't do anything for anybody. The thing is, and the exciting part is, let's get to the root of that headache. 10 people come in with a headache, there can be 10 different causes. One can be stressed. One can be dehydrated. One can have blood flow problems. One can be lacking sleep. One could have just eaten something that their body doesn't like. One can be overheated. And if you don't get to the root of that, you're not going to fix it. So if I figure out that the person who is dehydrated just needs to drink water, then let's just get you drinking water more often so that you don't have headaches. I don't need to keep giving you aspirin, which is going to make it go away temporarily.
Well, yeah, precisely. And that's just it. You're treating the actual person as a whole, not just poking and stabbing at the symptomology, which is, you know, I'm not saying it invalid. I'm not saying that's one of the big things that I wanted to have you on for, Doctor, especially as I was explaining before the show, was trying to explain to people that this thing's real. You're a naturopathic doctor. You use all kinds of things from nature to help heal people. Let me ask you a straight out question. Are we dealing with a pandemic right now and with a virus?
Are we what? What was the question?
Are we dealing with a pandemic and a virus? Is what we are dealing with health-wise in this country and the world real right now?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Now, you know, whether it was manufactured in a lab or whatever, I have heard from enough medical professionals that are actually dealing with patients to believe that it's a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
I've known enough people, like I fortunately haven't had people in my family to succumb to it, to get sick from it. But I've had enough friends and family members who know people who have, you know, who are dealing with it, who have dealt with it, who've passed away from it. So it's not a question in my mind about whether or not it's a real thing.
Well, and the reason I asked that, it may just seem out of the blue, folks. The reason I ask that is to show you that just because this person is a naturopathic doctor doesn't mean that they're saying, like, put an aura around you all day and that's gonna stop your virus, folks. No.
Right.
No.
Like, it might help something.
A copper grounding bracelet. And believe me, I'm surrounded by copper. I wear copper on me. I'm all with it. Don't get me wrong, like, you run some water through copper, you ain't going to have anything in that water. It's a good thing, but it's not going to stop the virus, all right? That's not how that works. Even the doctor here is saying that's not the case. So, but just want to get that out of the way before people start going, oh, well, it's a naturopathic doctor. You know, they believe all kinds of whack stuff. Not the case at all, just so you know.
Some of my colleagues do. So, you know,
let's put it out there.
There is a wide range of us.
But that's
so
not
some
you.
Of us do, you know, but that's not me.
That's not you. That's not our guest tonight, folks. I'm here to tell you. Which is why I loved, after doing some research on you and things like that, it was like, wow, I cannot wait to have her on to talk about these topics, to talk about what is medically going on in our world right now, to talk about what we as people can do to start making ourselves better patients for you doctors. Mm-hmm. Kind of like I see Jennifer Baker's tuned in right now. She's a defense lawyer that comes on the show to talk about civil rights things. It's like, isn't it horrible that we're trying to work you out of a job right now? The idea is
to
get people so much good advice that they don't need you anymore, that they don't make that stupid decision. And hopefully,
I would love that. Like, that would be my goal, is to have everybody so healthy and so well-informed about health and nature and how they can use natural means to strengthen themselves in all aspects of their lives, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, financially, use all these means to help elevate them so that they are not sick or not sick as often. Or when you get sick, you can know what to do to help get yourself better. And then I can go and do something else.
Yeah. Well, precisely, because if you're already in a good place 90% of the time and you get sick, it's pretty easy for the doctor to put the finger on what's going on. You know, and with that in mind, let's kind of start getting into the topic of your book, Take Vacations Daily, which is why I had you on tonight. We're coming up on 6 months right now of being locked up, being cooped up. I myself, and I'm a traveling AV tech, I am used to being on the road. I love my wife, doctor. She is tired of my face. She's sick of my face. She wants me to have a gig and get out of the house. She doesn't care if it's local. She doesn't care if it's an hour down the road.
Go somewhere.
just get out. Go away. So many people are up against this right now. They are up against the... I've talked to people who've worked in their industry for 25 years, and their issue mentally is literally just the hurdle of, I've never not worked. I don't know. Like, that's causing them anxiety, to not be at work, to take time off. We are one of the only cultures across the globe where we do not have purposeful time off from employer to employee, where it's like, hey, you go take 30 days of well time and go on vacation with your family.
Right.
You know?
Right.
We are one of the only cultures.
We don't realize the value of it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
No, I was just going to say, we're one of the only cultures where it's literally like, get ready to work till you're dead.
And it's horrible. Stress is killing us.
Yeah.
Stress is absolutely killing us because, as you mentioned, we don't take time off. We don't slow down. We don't rest. Even at night, we don't sleep. Because we, you know, the time that we're supposed to go to sleep, we're like, okay, the family, the kids, everybody is asleep. Now I can take the time to catch up on these things. And so that's the thing that you sacrifice. When in actuality, that's the thing that you actually need in order to function better and to be more productive. Your body cannot function in chronic stress. It cannot, well, let me rephrase that. Your body cannot function optimally in chronic stress, because clearly we can function, because we do. We just don't function optimally. In the body, you have part of your nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, has two divisions, sympathetic, parasympathetic. Sympathetic we know of as fight or flight. Parasympathetic is rest and digest. Fight or flight is supposed to be activated or turned on when you are in immediate danger. It's supposed to be activated so that you can get out of trouble, so that you're not eaten by the tiger, eaten by the bear, eaten by the lion, so that you can actually either fight it or run away from it. And then once you're out of danger, you go back into parasympathetic so that you can do the rest of everything. You can rest, you can digest. You cannot digest your food. You cannot poop. You cannot have sex. You cannot lactate. You cannot, urinate. You can't do those things properly if you're under stress, because those functions occur during parasympathetic, rest and digest.
That's right.
So if we are always under stress, sun up to sun down, and then we're not sleeping, we're only sleeping a few hours, the sleep is not restful. We wake up startled because the alarm clock wakes us up, and then we're on the go the entire day, and that cycle continues every single day, every single week, every single year. There is no way that our bodies won't break down because you're pushing yourself in a direction that you're not supposed to, literally not supposed to. Your body is not designed to function that way. And so we have to learn to rest. And that's the whole premise behind Take Vacations Daily. If we can retrain ourselves to take a mini vacation, 5 or 10 minutes once a day to start, 5 or 10 minutes once a day to start. You take time to be present in the moment, break the cycle of stress, then you are on the road to healing your body. And then the idea is as you start getting used to these 5 to 10 minute vacations, then you did it. So, you know, it was 5 minutes, let's do 10 minutes. We did 10 minutes, let's do 12. We did 12 minutes, let's do 12 minutes twice a day. Let's do 13 minutes twice a day. And then you build on it, so that you're not stressed all day, every day. And then you actually are able to rest and digest, which is the time that your body takes to heal and grow.
Precisely. And I love the way that you literally just laid out a mental exercise program. You know, you may as well have been saying, like, we're going to work lats on Wednesday. We're gonna do 30 minutes of cardio, then we're gonna go into a hard, heavy workout after that, because it really is the fact that our brains are muscles. I myself used to do quite a bit of meditation, quite a bit of even like active dreaming work, things like that, and my life got so busy, it got to where I did not pay attention to those things. I did not do that on a daily basis. I did not take the time out to do it. And now for me to be able to literally quiet my mind and find 10 minutes like that is almost impossible, because it's a muscle that I have not flexed, and it hurts to flex it.
Yeah. So in that case, like for many of us, I still have trouble meditating because my mind is so active.
Yeah.
But what I have to realize is that, one, there are different types of meditation, and two, it's okay to start small.
Sure.
So, you know, you hear people talking about 30 minutes an hour, and I want to jump into an hour. Well, my mind won't work like that. To sit in a quiet room with your eyes closed for an hour is very difficult for some people. So then don't do that. Find a different way. And so in the book, you know, I give examples like going outside and looking at the clouds, right? When you were a kid, didn't you go, you know, you and your friends looked at the clouds and you tried to figure out the shape. That is, you know, a type of meditation.
Absolutely.
I actively now go outside and look at the flowers that my mother is growing in the backyard. She has roses. And so I will literally smell the roses. I will literally smell the gardenias. And the other flowers, I will take the time to look at them. That is a type of meditation.
Absolutely.
For some people, it's washing dishes. For some people, it might be vacuuming the floor. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to be a guru of yoga or meditation. It just means that you need to do something where you are focused in the here and now with all of your senses.
Yeah.
Your you know, your eyes, your ears, your touch, your taste buds, all of your senses are focused right there. That is a type of meditation. And so you, sir, can find 5 minutes. It can be right when you wake up. It can be right before you go to bed. It can be when you're driving your car. Take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And just do something, and let that be your meditation.
Yeah, no, precisely. And I have gone that route as of late here in the last few months. I would like to thank a listener and good friend of the show who has actually just joined on our feed, Thaddeus Adams out there. I'm wearing a strand of mala beads. And it's literally just one of those, having them with me every once in a while, I touch them or I feel them, and it's one of those like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be trying to be calm. And that's kind of the idea behind a worry stone, folks, is not the fact that you're supposed to rub it when you're worried. It's the fact of it's supposed to be in your pocket. And whenever you touch it or feel it, you're supposed to be like, oh, yeah. And that's supposed to come back to mind, like tying a red string around your finger to remember the quart of milk on your way home, you know?
Right. And that's awesome, because then, like, if you pay attention to it, like, not just touch it and like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to meditate. Like, you can use that and actually feel it. Like, which stone am I feeling? What is the texture of it? Does it have any imperfections or any divots? Is it cold? Is it warm because it was near my body? You know, how many strands do I, how many beads do I have in my hand right now?
Yeah.
So, you know, just, again, focus on that thing for the moment and let it take you away from the stress and worry of, you know, what's going on in your life. That's awesome. The beads are awesome. I'm going to have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, it really is. For years and years, I have carried a crystal in my pocket, just as one of those vibrational things. I will say that is one of the only hippie parts of me, Doc, is I firmly believe in crystals. I really do. They are a vibrational energy, and they are there. And that's kind of what we're talking about right now, is purposefully taking a moment during the day to shift gears, to change your vibration on purpose, to become once again mindful, as our listener Doug Wiggins and good friend Doug Wiggins said, be present in the moment.
Exactly.
We so often forget, where are you? You're right here. You're right now. You don't have to think about it as a location. Just be right here, right now. And conquer that first.
Exactly. And that's not easy. And which is why, you know, I say start with 5 minutes. Five minutes is relatively easy. And if 5 minutes is too much, start with two. Start with three. Like, just make it purposeful in those small amounts of time and build from there. It doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. It doesn't mean that you failed. It just means that you have to start with a smaller quantity of time, and that is okay. But if you are intentional about it, then you can build on it and you can start to see greater benefit from it because you're actually doing it. Doing it for 2 minutes is very much better than thinking about it and not doing it for the hour that you thought about not doing it, if that makes sense.
Well, precisely. It's A, don't beat yourself up if you can't hit an hour. B, don't beat yourself up if you can't hit 5 minutes. The challenge that I used to give people whenever I taught religion and spirituality years ago was 3 times a day. Try to find 3 times a day to be thankful for anything. And basically what that's doing is it is removing you from you and that ego and saying, like, I accept something else other than me and my control. And I have to be thankful for what's there and what is provided to me. And I was like, I'll make it easy for you if you think you can't find 3 things to be thankful for every day. Number one, you woke up. Number two, you got to go to sleep tonight. So there's two of them done for you. You don't even have to think about it. Now all you got to do is find one every day. One reason to go, wow, that was something cool. Like, it could be a squirrel climbing a tree that you suddenly caught out of the corner of your eye and took a minute out of your day to look at. That could be your moment. It doesn't matter. But the idea is to be present of mind, to be there, to be actively looking for a moment.
And that brings to mind, just thinking about the squirrel. When I lived in Arizona, one day I realized that I did not see as many squirrels. And so just that idea was You know, it's like, oh yeah, I'm in a different place, a different climate, a different, you know, just a different community. So the animals are going to be different. So there aren't very many squirrels here. There were chipmunks, but there weren't very many squirrels.
Sure.
When I lived in Illinois, one of the common rodents that I saw were skunks. Like, who sees skunks around their apartment building? Me. That was weird. So, you know, just, again, looking at things, paying attention to your surroundings, even, you know, while you're walking around your apartment complex, while you're driving down the street, because believe me, when the roadkill is skunk, you smell it before you get to it.
Oh, you'll know.
What's that?
Oh, you'll know.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, just paying attention to your surroundings, as you mentioned, and it can be almost anything, but being in that moment and paying attention to it is valuable.
It really is. It really is. Trying to make sure that you are aware of what you're doing, that you are present in mind, like Doug was saying a minute ago, just be present in the moment. Years ago, as I was getting married, I had a spell, and that's what led me down the road of finding out about my family, anxiety issues, things like that. I had always known that we had heart issues on both sides of my family, but I never knew about the quote Jordan anxiety. And I guess it was just that I wasn't that close to that side of my family, but come to find out, like, everybody in my family has this propensity. And I found out by about 6 months before my wedding, going out to do some grocery shopping, and waking up in the manager's office. I literally just passed out.
Interesting.
And it was like God just hit the reset button on the back of my head. When I saw the footage, the guy who, like, went and got the manager and they called the EMTs, all that kind of stuff. But it was literally the footage of me in the aisle looking at cans of stuff and then just dropping like a rock. Oh. And come to find out, straight up stress, not knowing how to deal with stress, not knowing how to deal with everything going on in my mind, which is always a racing conundrum of a world in there. And that's when I started a little bit of talk therapy. And I remember my therapist, Joe, explaining the world like a train. He's like, that train's always going. And sometimes the road you're on comes across the train. And what you need to do is realize you're going to have to wait for the train to go by. There's nothing you can do. You could try to fight the train. That's not going to end well. You could probably try a really long way around the train, but you're going to come up against the same train. My suggestion is just stop and slow down and wait for the train to pass by. And just realize the fact that there's a train there. And literally just stop and realize there's a train there.
It's amazing because I was talking to a colleague today, and she literally gave the example of a train. So that's pretty cool. But another thing that you mentioned is something else that is needs to be reiterated. A lot of people don't even realize how much stress they're under.
Yeah.
Because we live in a society where we are always on the go, we don't know how to slow down, which is very evident in the conversation that you mentioned earlier, where there are so many people who during the lockdown, quarantine, stay home orders, they're going nuts because they have never stayed in one place very long. They don't know how to rest. They don't know how to relax. And it's unnerving for them. They didn't realize. Mm-hmm. No, people didn't realize or don't realize how much stress they are under because life was chronic stress. Life was constantly on the go. So, you know, you ask them, so how are you doing? How much stress do you have? Oh, I don't have much. And you're looking at them like, yeah, you do.
Look like but a hot mess. What are you talking about? No stress.
Right. But because, exactly. But because everything they know is through the lens of hot mess.
That's right.
They can't see it.
Well, that's just it. Once, and in one of my notebooks, it was actually a moment with our guest Richard Spazoff, and I remember I wrote it down because I was like, I need to remember that, and it's great because it's literally just on a random page that is now the first page of my notebook, in my backpack, and every once in a while I'll pull it out to make some notes, and I see it. And the quote is, it's a sad day when misery becomes the status quo.
Right.
And yeah, that's really where we have become as a society. We look for that moment of self-loathing. We look for that purposeful moment where we can blame ourselves, where we can beat ourselves up. Even if you look at our comedy nowadays, most of our comedy is, and my wife teaches improv comedy, folks, and she hates me for saying this, most of our comedy is low-hanging fruit. It is straight-up sarcasm. Mm-hmm. It is there to make fun of other people, and is that a positive vibe necessarily that we're putting out? Is that something, are we right now in a reap-what-you-sow society? When it comes to those things,
it's hard. And just those little things that you mentioned, I say little things, they're not really little things, but the things that you mentioned are all the things that come back, whether it's karma or, you know, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
That those are the things that come back and set us up to be more susceptible to things like coronavirus, cold, flu, obesity, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol.
That's right.
That those are the types of things that, you know, that help set us up. And so it's not necessarily just because you talk bad about somebody that you're going to get these things. No,
no.
That is the mindset that you have that sort of leads you to everything else that you do.
That's right.
You know, the way you eat, the way you handle stress, the way you you act and react to other people, the way you rest, the way or don't rest.
That's right.
Move through the world. If you have a negative trajectory in the way that you move through the world, you're setting yourself up for illness. You're setting yourself up for disease that leads to dis-ease, or dis-ease that leads to disease. You set yourself up for those things. And, you know, going back to coronavirus, there is no cure that, you know, right now, because this is a very new virus to humans. But the reality is our bodies have been acting and reacting to viruses and bacteria and fungi and parasites again since we've been on Earth.
Well,
is what has kept us here.
I think that's the big misnomer that people are having, Doc, is it the same thing that we talk about regularly with Dr. John Hall, and that is the fact of people are expecting a silver bullet. They're expecting a vaccine,
right.
and granted, there will be a vaccine, but that is not a cure, people. You cannot cure a virus. It doesn't work that way. A virus mutates. A virus changes. If we could cure a virus, we wouldn't have the common cold.
Right.
We wouldn't have 28 strains of the flu and growing.
Right.
We can cure bacteria. We can, you know, but we will not have a panacea or a cure-all that's going to just come up and go, coronavirus, smack, you're gone. It's not going to happen. We will find things that help mitigate. We will find things that help boost our immune system. We will find things that help alleviate symptomology. But that's it. Like the head of the WHO has said, the world will have to learn to live with coronavirus. Mm-hmm. We've literally got to learn to change our mentality, change the way that we think about this, change the way that we think about living our lives, about how we interact with people, everything. This is a total game changer. And, you know, the one thing that I love is that you were saying that our energy brings about the change inside of us. And granted, to go back a second, folks, that's not to say that if you're out there gossiping that that is what causes coronavirus. That's not what we're saying. wouldn't that be awesome if that was the case, Go? Just stop talking smack about people and you won't get sick.
That would be great.
Wouldn't it be?
That would be great. That would be great.
The internet would be all kittens again. It'd be awesome. It'd just be kittens and baby monkey videos all day long. But
rescue puppies and bunnies. Yep.
But it really has come to show more and more in science and the science that comes out in the data, the fact that our mentality, the way that we look at things, actively changes all of it. And there's a great new movie out. I'm working on getting Caroline Corey as a guest on the show right now. But if you have not seen the movie Superhuman, folks, go out, pay the $10. If you thought What the Bleep Do We Know was something, Superhuman by Caroline Corey will blow your mind. She actively goes through and changes the electromagnetic resonance of DNA with her thought. And if that's not a causality experiment right there to show the fact that what we think affects our health, what we think affects the world around us, our vibration affects the world around us. I really don't know what there is. And to know that going through these mindfulness exercises and take vacations daily, going through things like this are so entirely important, especially right now. If you're looking for something to do, like as a locked up COVID person, this is probably the best thing you could do is go out and get this book, folks, just to start kind of preparing yourself for that world that you're going to have to jump both feet first into at some point. And
absolutely,
the stress of dealing with that.
We can't keep the world. We can't keep it closed forever. Right. We're going to have these ebbs and flows for, you know, the next few months. But as you mentioned, this is something that's going to be here. And so we have to truly learn how to exist in this new version of the world. But we also have to realize that what we were doing wasn't working in so many different areas of our lives. And now is the absolute perfect time to start making changes and to start changing habits and to start changing traditions and to start building new habits and increasing your health. And, you know, if you have trouble doing that, get you some friends on board that will help remind you. My colleagues and some students, like the students that I'm in contact with, especially in the thick of all of this, you know, we would really check in on each other. Mm. And there have been a few of us where I've actually scheduled text messages to go to them, you know, throughout the month.
Yeah.
To ask them, have you eaten? You know, have you done this? Have you done that? Today I had a text message go to one person and it was, have you eaten? And she responded, this is what I've eaten today. Have you done X, Y, and Z? And I was like, you know what? I have not. Let me go and do that now. So
I love
to help me get out of my own way.
Yeah.
I have helped recruit some people where we, you know, support each other through this. I would not have done that before, but that is something that has, that is helping me actively make some things that I'm doing. And so don't try to do it alone. You know, being socially distant doesn't mean that you can't communicate with people, that you lean on them, that you can't, you know, trust them to help you and you help them. We still have to have connection.
Well, and that's just it. It's really quite the opposite because we're socially distant. And if you think about it, folks, think about it like I come from a Cajun upbringing and our families are very, very close most of the time in Cajun culture, despite how far away we get. It's one of those, like, you call home, you know, that's just what you do. and in our society, it's strange because nowadays you're loath to know your neighbor two doors down on the cul-de-sac, you know? And if you go back to our parents' time, if you go back a good 40, 50 years, things like that, it's literally the direct opposite. The direct opposite. People took time to get together with their neighbors, to play canasta, to, you know, in our culture, it was the fait au deux. You know, everybody gets together, you put your kids to bed in the back, and you get out front and you play some music and hang out. And the necessity for communication in moments like this in society is so absolutely crucial. Crucial. And I found it hilarious. I myself grew up in the age of video games coming to the forefront. And I remember giving my parents the argument of hand-eye coordination and memorization. You know, that was my justification back in the day. You realize that my hand-eye coordination and my, you know, my rote memorization skills are going to be off the charts because of having to remember how these video games work. And all of 2 years ago, you could literally see reports from the World Health Organization saying, like, video games are horrible. They're horrible. They're taking away from the communication of society. And when all this happened, it was like the exact direct opposite from the World Health Organization going, video games are the perfect way to stay in touch with people. Like, because everybody's got headsets now and they're cooperative gaming and they're hanging out with people from Taiwan and stuff like that playing their games. And where at one point it was like, no, get out, be face-to-face, be social. Now it's like, no, feel free to be social over a microphone. It's all good.
Yeah. The world has absolutely changed. And, you know, you have to be like Bruce Lee said, you know, be like water.
Yes.
So be flexible. You know, steadfast, to keep moving towards a goal, but be flexible. And that's what we need right now.
That's
so,
right.
Again, learning new ways of being going to absolutely be what keeps us sane. Because honestly, it's hard. It's hard.
It is.
It's so hard.
Well, and, you know, I myself, as a freelancer, I see right now, literally on the screen, two handfuls of freelancers that have been part of the conversation and are actively part of the conversation right now. And they are very much in the same way. We are bendy people, so to speak, when it comes to business. We are all multifaceted gems. Most of us who are freelancers understand that. I have seen my freelance friends go out and start contracting businesses like, hey, man, I got tools. I got ladders. I got all this stuff. You need a fence built? I can do it. And yet at the same time, I've seen other people who are not able to have that flex inside of them. And right now is really one of those crucial moments in society and humanity where it is testing who is the oak and who is the willow. And you got to be supple like a willow, folks. You got to be able to bend in the breeze. Otherwise, you're going to snap. And it really
literally,
people,
and figuratively, yes.
Yeah, like my wife and I kind of laugh at all of it because we've both been self-employed and freelancers for so long. It's like, we're used to living on nothing. So, like, for us to make that little bit stretch another 2-3 weeks, like, we're already used to that. So this
right.
is, you know, it isn't really horribly economically stressful on us. But I can see how a lot of people, it has really affected them. Like I said earlier, just the fact of them not going to work. I had the conversation with my wife yesterday of what I have defined myself as for 20 years right now is no more. And that's not my
Correct.
Doing. That was not like a, you know, it's time for me to retire. Been doing this long enough. That wasn't it. This was thrust upon me, and having to deal with that gear, that's not even a gear change. That's stripping the gears. And having to kind of redefine myself in so many different ways. I think that has really brought a lot of people to a point of just sheer exhaustion, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And when that happens, there's only one more leg on that table of life, and that's health.
Mm-hmm.
And when two or three of those start failing amongst that, the table gets real wobbly. It doesn't hold things mm-hmm. right, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when
you have to realize that the important thing is not to necessarily do something else. The important thing is to not do.
Yeah.
And heal and rest, because you're probably lacking it. And so now that you're forced to do it, go ahead and do it before the table falls to the ground.
Yeah, precisely. And I myself have been, aside from taking care of a few projects, really taking the time to fortify other parts of my life. That lift me up, that make me happy, that fulfill me in other ways than my daily grind of going out and helping people at shows, and at the end of the day going, man, I helped a lot of scared presenters not be so scared at the end of the day. That was nice. you know?
Yeah.
And that's so important. People don't realize that it, much like going back on things, it's the fact of taking those small moments and realizing small victories.
You have to realize the small victories, because if you don't notice those, you'll never realize the forward progress that you're making, and that's discouraging, and that's just another thing to add on to the mound of the, you know, lack of motivation and all of the negative things. If you can start to realize the small victories, that can keep you moving. That can keep you putting one step in front of the other, and it can keep your mind flexible enough to be able to be like water, to be able to pivot when the situation calls mm-hmm. for it. Which, you know, this time right now is a huge pivot. And some people are really not handling it well. They're not flexible. So, yeah, if you can recognize the little changes, the small progress, or recognize the progress, the changes in areas that you weren't necessarily looking at or
That's
looking
right.
for, then that can help you move forward, like really, really move forward.
Yeah, and that's a really great idea. Like you were saying, to look at the progress that you've made in other areas that you may not have ever even been looking at. You know? And Brandon Mitchell, one of our listeners, was just ringing in with, yes, absolutely, spot on. Recognize the small victories. And it's something that I try to tell people so frequently. I had the conversation with a guy on my network last night. Like, you can't look at what somebody else has accomplished and be disappointed that you haven't done the same. Your situations are different. There are so many different factors that go into that. You really have to look at every stride you have made in order to do that. And like we were saying a minute ago, having that mindfulness to see this truly right now, there is a movement in medicine going toward mindfulness meditation, going toward the concept of taking these small intermittent times, making sure to take every single minute that you can for yourself.
It's so necessary. Like, I mean, that's really the biggest thing that I can say right now is it is so necessary to take time for yourself, to be mindful. And mindful for a lot of people, it's a new concept. It's sort of a woo-woo concept. And basically all it means is stop thinking about everything else and just focus on the one thing that is not work-related, that does not stress you out, that does not worry you. Focus on the one thing to help you to begin to rejuvenate yourself. You have to do it. And recognizing the small victories along the way. And as far as the small victories are concerned, one reason why I love bringing that up is because when I'm working with patients, let's say on weight loss, you know how we'll say, oh, I want to lose some weight in my stomach. I want to lose some weight in my thighs. And then you go on this program of exercising and dieting, and you start losing, you know, inches and weight everywhere else except there. That might be the last place that hits. For the person who's not paying attention to it, that's a failure because they hadn't lost weight in their stomach. But they're down 10 pounds. Their, you know, energy is better. Their clothes are fitting better. But the scale's not moving.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, you can easily get discouraged when you're not seeing what you want to see. But if you can see those other milestones, if you can say, you know, I'm making these small progress, then you can move forward. I remember when I was a personal trainer many years ago, I had a client who was very upset and disappointed because she was only losing 1 pound a week. And I was like, I looked at it and I said, okay, now you tell me, in 1 year, if you have lost 52 pounds, are you going to be really upset about it? She said, no. I said, well, then hush up. Because that's what 1 pound a week is going to give you. If you keep doing what you're doing now, that's 50 pounds.
That's right.
A year.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But you're looking at it as only 1 pound a week. No. Those are small steps moving you towards your goal. Okay, so your goal was 100 pounds in a year. You didn't reach it. But are you really going to be upset about 50 pounds? I don't think so.
Yeah. That's literally almost a quarter pound a day. What's your problem?
Right.
But that's the thing. Right. We get caught up and we forget that forest that seems so insurmountable is made up of individual trees.
Yep.
We forget that you can eat an elephant, but probably not at one sitting.
Correct.
You know, and it really is a chip away. Do what you can do. And that's really just it. Do what you can do. And don't be afraid to stop once you've done what you can do. You know, I tried to explain to people a while back, when I started doing my own kind of mindfulness, when I started doing stuff for myself, and I was still involved with my community, I was still out helping other people, but it was like, it's time for me to focus on me. If I'm not happy, how do I have anything left to give to anybody else? If my cup isn't full, how do I have anything left to help fill other people's cups?
That is literally the phrase that we've been using quite a bit recently. You cannot pour from an empty cup. And so that goes into the conversation of self-care. Self-care is a huge phrase right now. It's a very popular phrase these days. Take care of yourself. Do self-care. And, you know, you still have people who are very resistant to that. But the very best example that I can give, and I honestly have to tell myself this often, right? I can't pour from an empty cup. If I don't stop, if I don't rejuvenate, if I don't rest, if I don't replenish myself, I have absolutely nothing to give to anybody else. And if I'm constantly giving to other people, then I am no good. I actually have a colleague who, who talks a lot about caregivers, like the health of caregivers. And one of the things that he told me that was extremely profound recently was that caregivers, it is not uncommon for the caregiver to pass away before the person that they're caring for. Could be people who never had any major health concerns, but because they kept pouring into the other person and never poured into themselves, they passed away before the person that had the illness, whatever the illness was. And she had three women in her family, not her family, well, like the family that she created, three of her, you know, people, ladies she called aunties. They passed away because they were so wrapped up in caring for someone else. And the other person is still alive, missing them, but still alive. So we have to learn how to fill our cups.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on that note, one of the things that we have talked about repeatedly with Dr. John Hall whenever we've done our COVID updates is the concept of what's going on out there with our first responders, with people in hospitals on the front lines. They are facing something that they've never faced. Sure, there are probably a small cadre of them out there that have done wartime duty, something along those lines. But to be making the decisions that your average respiratory therapist is making on the daily in a COVID ward, that's not a normal thing for them. To be making the decision of, they may be making the decision of what a course of therapy is for someone, but they aren't deciding who gets the respirator.
Right.
That's not a decision that they're used to making, but it's one that they're being forced to make right now in some situations. And the mental wherewithal for that, the mental wherewithal of the doctors who have seen this day in, day out since the beginning, banging their head against the wall, trying to do something. I can't even. I know where I'm at emotionally, physically, spiritually with all of it. I can't even imagine where people like you who have a general practice and are dealing with people regularly, people like John Hall, people like my cousin who was just recently called out to help in the COVID ward, spent a week and a half there doing duty in Houston. I can't even imagine that and the stress that they're going through. So to know that there are ways that we can help mitigate this, at the very least in our own life, at the very least in our own life, like we're saying, if our cup can be full enough to help one of them, then we're a help, you know?
Right.
And if you really do start to look at this literal, and the way I've tried to put it to people before, whenever I've tried to explain to them where some of my Zen comes from with some of it, is I can't do anything about it, so why am I worried about it? I can only worry about me and what I can immediately run to. That's it. If it is beyond what I can run to at speed, I can't do anything about it. All I can do is help myself and help those directly around me and hope that ripple goes further. That's it. And it really is that selfishness to be selfless. The fact of, wait, hold on, I need to take care of myself and fill this part of me so that I have something to be able to give to the other people that come to me for help. Because if that part isn't fulfilled in me, then I'm not a happy person. And if I'm not happy, then I can't help the people around me. And I am not a help to the world around me. Instead, I am a hindrance. And at that point, it kind of becomes a point of self-responsibility to make sure that you take care of yourself. Like, I may not get as many daily vacations as I need, but man, I love my show. I make sure I do this show every week. I've done this show every week for what is now over 5 years, every single Tuesday. And I love that. It is my break away from the rest of the world. When this show happens, this is the focus. The message is the focus. This is my medicine. And mm-hmm. I make sure I do that so that I have the energy to give to other people and to know that people like you are out there, Doctor, writing books like Take Vacations Daily, to know that you're out there practicing holistic medicine. And let's talk real quick about this new book that you have, Quarantine Kitchen Cookbook. Because I was saying, my wife, for her sanity's sake, has gotten back into baking and recently bought the book Rage Baking, which is apparently kind of a book where it's like, here's something to bake and a meditation to go along with it while you bake. Bang your issues out in this dough. So let's start getting into a little bit of the Quarantine Cookbook and even how cooking, doing things like that, can be your moment of daily vacation.
Yeah, it's so. I was in the middle of another project, but of course, coronavirus kind of put a halt on that, and everyone had to deal with everything. So, like that major shift that everyone was feeling, like even those of us who are in holistic medicine was feeling it. We were feeling the weight and gravity of it as well. So, a few weeks in, I actually contacted some colleagues and I mentioned, you know, like now is a perfect time for us to create a cookbook. Who's in with me? And that's what we did. So these are literally recipes that we have used over the last few months during quarantine when everyone was shifted into eating more home cooked meals. So, you know, you have a variety, you have vegan, vegetarian, meat-based, gluten-free, dairy-free, you have desserts, you have drinks. Like, there's a variety of them. And these are just some of the things that have helped us to keep ourselves at least healthier, to keep our families healthier in the midst of eating all the snacks. And, you know, they're just our way of saying this is what our family did. And in the book as well, we also offer health information. So a lot of food is medicine information. So you have one author who talked about the effects of food on your hormones, one author who talks about how to get your children to actually like vegetables. You know, the mindset of how food affects you mentally and how, you know, emotionally, traditionally. There's, you know, a little bit of something for everybody. Some even took pictures of their meal. So you're literally seeing, you know, our plates, our presentation of these meals. And again, it was just our way of saying we're all dealing with this. Here is a glimpse of how we're doing it with some of the meals that we are cooking. And honestly, the meals look great. The recipes are awesome. You know, some are a little bit more detailed than others, but they all just sound really delicious. And so, you know, that is sort of our offering to everyone who's literally still in the middle of it, because we're still in the middle of it. And a big thing that I wanted to remind, that I have to remind people of,
please,
is that the first wave of coronavirus, like, we really haven't gotten through the first wave. And we're talking about this second wave that's to be coming in the fall. Wait, believe it or not. So we really have to get our health in order right now so that we are less susceptible to getting ill from things like coronavirus. And, you know, remember, cold and flu season is still on the horizon.
Yeah.
So doing what you can do to make yourself healthier so that you're less susceptible to these things is going to be key. And here are a few recipes. Actually, it's like 36 recipes to help you get there.
Well, and, you know, what we I love the fact that Doug Wiggins is tuned in for this, because when you were mentioning the gluten-free, the vegan, like, he is a friend of mine that I work with on the road, and over the last year or so, he has switched his diet and complete and utter difference in so many things in his life. It really is key and important to figuring out, like, hey, just because steak works for you doesn't mean it works for your wife.
Right.
Like, health-wise. And to go back to a more holistic and more naturalistic view of eating, and to go back to that backyard mentality of eating fresh, eating local, stopping fast food. That is one thing that I will say that I have loved about this quarantine, is that my wife and I have cooked at home a whole lot more. And, like, dude, she made some homemade chicken pot pies that were A, killer, B, cost about $5 for the three of us to eat for 2 days.
Right.
So, like, literally, when you're talking about cooking at home for people, yes, it takes a minute or two longer. But once again, make that part of your mindfulness. Make that part of your, I am doing this for a purpose. And instead of literally mentally viewing dinner as a chore that has to be done, view it as an opportunity. It's just those little bitty gear switches like that that really do begin to make a difference in your everyday life. Whenever you learn to flip that switch and just kind of go, instead of seeing that as a drain, let's see what kind of fun I can have with it tonight.
Absolutely. And that is one reason why every book that I write, every time I speak in front of an audience, I always talk about the mental aspect of health. You have to start there, because as you mentioned, if you don't have the mentality right, then it's going to be so much more of a struggle. It's going to be so much more difficult to get to the goal that you want to get to. And this is the same. This is not just in health. This is in finances.
Yeah.
This is in spirituality.
Yep.
This is in business. Like, every single thing. You have books and gurus and all of these things talking about the mindset of success. That is no different than in health. And so once you can flip that switch, as you mentioned, and make cooking a regular part of your life, get in the habit of cooking now while we're still in some sort of lockdown.
That's right.
Then once the world starts opening back up, then it's not as difficult to conceive the idea of cooking meals, even if it's one meal a day. cooking a meal and sitting at the table with the family as opposed to eating out.
Yep.
Because the outcome is going to be better. You're going to end up saving more money. You're going to have that family time again like people used to do,
yeah.
Sit around the table and actually talk to each other. And how much more can you and your family grow and strengthen as a unit when we bring back those types of meals and conversations,
yeah.
And you're improving your health to boot.
Yeah, precisely. And it's an all around good thing. There's nothing not good about it, from the fact of family sitting down and having, and that's quite honestly one of the threads that we have carried through every single episode about COVID on this show, is that, God willing, at the end of this, we have a new perspective on society. We have a new respect for family and loved ones. We have a newfound respect for taking that time away. I think that we're going to mm-hmm. end up with a lot of people that, number one, didn't realize they could be self-employed, and now they are, which is going to be
exactly.
great. Mentally, even though that's a hurdle in and of itself. But
exactly.
we've also probably found a whole lot of people that sat through 2 hours of traffic on their way in and an hour and a half on their way home that now found out, hey man, I could do this at home. I don't have to sit through 2 hours of traffic. I could be at home and do my job and be more productive and actually take care of my family. And I think that's an amazing thing. So if we actively, once again, as a society, switch gears, kind of get away from the fear and see how we can make this situation work for us, see how we can make it a situation that betters us as families, betters us as people, betters the way that we interact as people, I think that would go a long way. And it really is the fact of how we choose to look at the situation. We are up against some horrible things, but the odds are in our favor, and that's the plus. Mm-hmm. So, Doctor.
So the next challenge will be once we make that shift and the world opens back up, finding a way to keep it. Not letting it get away. So that'll be the next challenge. And so for everyone who's listening, I want you to understand that that is a challenge, that will be a challenge, and get yourself prepared right now for that challenge. What are you going to set in place to make, your family time, to continue with the family time? What are you going to set in place to make sure that you are going out in nature more, the way that we had to start doing, making sure that we have some more downtime so that we can rest, so that we can recuperate, making sure that we actually have meaningful connections to people instead of whatever benefit or whatever changes you've had to, been forced to make or made willingly during this time, make sure you're also at least giving yourself some checks and balances or some preparation so that when things open back up, you can keep these things because they are so valuable to you.
That's right. That's right. And, earlier in the show, you mentioned the fight or flight response. And mm-hmm. so much of our society is based on that. I myself worked in mainstream media for a while. There's a reason why they chase the headline instead of the story. The headline is what gives you that dopamine hit. It's what constantly keeps you off kilter. It's what constantly keeps you looking for more. If you're waiting for a story, then you've got patience. See? You aren't worried about the immediate dopamine hit. You're worried about what's going to fix the problem later. And that goes a long way. And if you go back and start looking at the society of our great-grandparents here in America, the reason why so many of them lived into their 90s, things like that, they were an agrarian society. They were out. They were moving. They were doing things on the daily. They were moving around. They were doing stuff. They didn't have machines to do all of it for them. They were walking that plow line behind a mule, that kind of stuff. They were also eating fresh food. They cared about their neighbors, and they had time. When the sun went down, so did the light went away.
Yep.
You weren't up until 11:30 or midnight, because when the sun came up, the animals woke up. You had to go take care of them. You had to go do things. And as our society has changed, literally the way our bodies respond have changed. And the hard-learned lessons of our body over millennia for fight or flight have now been hijacked. Whereas our fight or flight response, believe it or not, folks, is a good thing. It is what allowed us to survive in the wilderness. Like, it's a good thing. But unfortunately, we've been taught to use it and overuse it so much that it's become the predominant part of our mentality as a society. And that, I think, has led to a lot of our issue. That, I think, has led to a lot of our problem. The fact that we do not know how to slow down. We have not learned how to get away from that fight or flight response of the world around us. And seeing it that way. If we could get back to, and hopefully, like we're saying, some of COVID gets us back to that earlier mentality of slow down, get away from it. You know, get out into the country and go fishing or camping for the weekend. You know, I think it will go a long, long way for us as a society, as a people. But it really does take that mental switch, that choice when you wake up in the morning.
Yes. It does. But, you know, once you can start to flip that switch, it is so much better. It's not easy. Yeah. And you might have to remind yourself how to flip the switch, but it is so worth it. You are so worth it. So make sure that you are taking the time to do the things for you that will be like that light, like flipping that switch.
That's
and,
right.
You know, and making sure that you are healthy and happy and strong and rested and joyous and all the things.
Yeah, exactly. Taking that time to be selfishly selfless.
Yes.
Where you purposefully focus on you so that you can help other people if they need it. Thank you so much for taking the time this evening, Doctor. Tell everybody where they can go to get their copy of Take Vacations Daily, Learning to Live More and Dress Less, as well as their own copy of Quarantine Kitchen Cookbook.
Yeah, you can actually go to my website, so www.drtursha.com/books specifically. So that's drtursha.com/books to order any of the books that I've written. The Quarantine Kitchen Cookbook is a new release. We literally just released it last week. We released the ebook last week. So the physical book is on pre-sale right now. We are expecting to get the physical books within the next, you know, couple few weeks. And so we can start sending those out. And I'm pretty excited about it. But yeah, www.drtursha.com. You can find out more about me, about naturopathic medicine. And if you're on social media, you can follow me on all the social medias at Dr. Tursha. Again, that's D R T-U-R-S-H-A. I'm much more active on Facebook and Instagram, but you can connect with me on YouTube and Twitter, and again, all the social medias at Dr. Tersha.
Fantastic. Once again, Dr. Tersha, thank you so much for taking the time, for coming on, explaining holistic medicine, naturopathic medicine. Like I said, I have been looking for somebody to come on the show and talk about such things for years. So the fact that you have come on and talk about this is great to me. I would love to have you back on again. I cannot wait for my copy of Take Vacations Daily to come in the mail. Lord knows I need to start doing that kind of journaling and everything else while I have a little bit of time off the road myself. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you're online checking out everything from Dr. Tersha, make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast, everybody. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find all of the books from our guests as well. That's where you can find the Knowledge Vault. Make sure to stop on by HC Universal Network, our parent network, as well as our sponsor, PodcastCadet.com. You want to start up a show for yourself, your family, fun, friends, whatever. Stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. Dudes20 is the code to save 20%. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer podcast.
Be good at it.
To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.